IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Okay, right. We want your views on how you think the Ulster final is going to go. Of course, Donegal, having beaten Derry, having beaten Tyrone, are going in with high expectations amongst many against Armagh, who struggled a little bit in their semi-final. I presume Donegal will be favourites, but we have to manage our expectations too as well. So how do you think it's going to go? Oisin Kelly is going to be joining us to talk about the game. Martin McHugh is going to be joining us as well. If you have any questions or points that you want to put to them, please get in touch right now. How do you do so? Well, WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And hey, if you want to guess the score, feel free to do so. How do you think it will go? If you get it right, or whoever gets it right, we'll give you a shout out on Monday. That would be quite nice, wouldn't it? We might even put together a bit of a goodie bag for you. So if you want to predict the score as well, please do. Whoever gets it right or is closest, we'll give them a Highland Radio goodie bag on Monday. Thanks again to Kieran, Antoinette and John for their contributions over the last hour. Particularly too, thank you very much for calling in with your own comments. Them men spinning yarns again. All people in the media do is talk about Ukrainians and women and children and people fleeing war. Truth is, 90% of these people are not fleeing war. They're fleeing the threat of being sent to Rwanda. Simplify the question. How many and for how long could any household sustain any number of extra people on the existing income of that household? The same with the government. And who's paying for these tents which are continually being dumped and burned? Where are the green policies now? I presume it's NGOs that are handing them out. I'm not sure. Greg, the problem with politicians and government in Ireland is that they spent years creating a nanny state, which has led to everybody expecting everything to be done for them. This is not possible. So they lash out on social media like spoiled brats. Thus, politicians get it in the neck. A caller says there is a law that if there is a walker crossing within 100 yards, you're obliged to use it. Oh, right, OK. The same applies to cycle lanes and footpaths. I'm going to have to double check. We checked with the guards. You're not obliged to use cycle lanes, as far as I understand it. But let me double check that. Greg, I missed the slot about hemomoncrosis. That's too much iron in the blood. And the only clear cure, or all you can do, is to get units of blood removed, which unfortunately is then dumped. But if you go to the blood bank, which is in Donegal next week in Killybegs in Donegal town, and if you go to giveblood.ie, you can see throughout the year the places they be, as they're always in high demand for blood, and thankfully it can be used. I usually go 3 times a year and that keeps levels low. Good, thank you. Very well, very happy to reiterate that. That formed part of the conversation as to how people self-medicate in donating blood. There are certain questions you'll be asked on giveblood.ie, but it can be used. So thank you for that. Hi, Greg. What annoys the public about politicians is statements that they make and there's no outcome. One politician has posters up around our area. He had them up during the last election stating, "We will build the Bonagie Link Bridge." 4 years later and we're no further forward. These statements annoy the general public. Send us a picture in if you have of that poster. Not that I in any way doubt what you're saying. I seem to recall it, but it's just handy for the records. Any country that is not a member of the EU should not take part in the so-called Eurovision. Well, it is actually called the Eurovision. It's not so-called. Israel should be banned. So that means Australia are out and a couple of others as well. Hello, Greg. What I have to say is concerning the migration issue. The solution to all the infighting about too many people coming when we can't house them, if you're filling a pothole under the tap and it starts to overflow, just turn off the tap. Patrol the border, Dublin. We don't want shantytowns popping up all over the country. Donegal's bursting at the seams. Thank you. Are we talking about a hard border there, really? You know, you start patrolling the border, that is a hard border. And the British quite cleverly have said, Ireland, we don't want a hard border. They flipped our language back onto us. Eurovision and genocide. The Jewish state of Israel is genociding Palestinian children, their mothers and their families. It should be banned from the Eurovision, simple as that. Says a listener. Hi, Greg. This situation is going to be impossible to police. Apparently, they're being offered buses from Belfast at a cost by unscrupulous people, and the migrants aren't aware they don't need them. The problem is we are and will continue to be overrun with migrants from Britain will be unable to sustain this influx as it's only escalating massively. We are done for, unfortunately. I think as a society we'll survive, but I take your point. There are people are going around Britain now making a fortune in going up to migrants saying, look, you don't want to go to Rwanda, don't you? Well, we'll get you a job in Dublin. Get on this bus, or this is how you do it. And they're actually turning up at the IPAS centre. That's where their job is, in inverted commas. Hi, Greg. Why is Israel in Eurovision if it's all the way in the Middle East? Never mind the genocide and land grabs. As I say, they probably wanted to go global. There probably was a decent financial incentive to include Israel, and Australia's involved as well. So there is precedent there. I saw a guy spraying weed killer. He won't say who he's working for. Weed killer is highly toxic and shouldn't be sprayed at this time of the day. What can I do to stop him? I don't know what the story is in regards to that. I do have my concerns about some of the toxic weed killers that we are using on our public roads and byways, and dogs and children running through that grass with no signs or warning, really. Hi, Greg. Did you see the video doing the rounds on social media regarding the new greenway from Castle Finn? 6 cycles using the road while the cycle lane is provided at over 3 million. Shocking. I did see it and I referenced it in the first hour. It is kind of funny. I know the subject matter is serious, but obviously the guy videoing it has a bit of humour about him as well, in that you can't help but laughing a little bit because he does pan to the empty cycleway and he pans back to the road and some fruity language, which is used for comedic effect. Hey, thank you so much for all of your comments. It's great to see them. Lots on posters, lots on politicians. I'm going to work through them over the course of the next wee while. And a lot of these issues also will carry over until Monday. Come on, Donegal, and all the best to Jim and his team and all the backing staff, to all the supporters travelling. Take care. Take sunscreen, I wonder. I suppose Sunday the weather's changing a little bit, but when the sun's out, the UV levels are going to be particularly high. Not particularly high, sorry, are going to be elevated. Just a request before the break for Mary Barrett, drummer Clohan Milford. Mary is 80 today. Happy birthday, Mary, from your daughter, Fiona, Fiona Boyle, and son-in-law, Brendan, and grandchildren, Clara, Rose, Thomas and Rory. Enjoy the celebrations, Mary Barrett in Milford, and big happy birthday from all of us here at Highland Radio and all the listeners as well. I hope you are spoiled rotten. A birthday barbecue might be nice, but make sure, I suppose, that the cake doesn't melt. Okay, so it's kind of sport really up until 11. We're going to be previewing the Ulster final shortly, but now we are going to focus on soccer. And a new book is on its way, We Are the Harps. It's written by Bartley Ramsey and Joe Doherty, and they're going to launch their book, We Are the Harps, in the company of members of the 1974 FEI Cup winning squad on Saturday, the 11th of May. It's at 7 p.m. in Drumbrough Suite, Jackson's Hotel, Bala Buffet. Bartley and Joe, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Not at all. Good morning. How are you?
Very good. And I understand the book today will literally be hot off the press.
That's right, Greg. Yeah, we're just awaiting delivery from the printers this morning. So we've got our draft copies that we got a couple of weeks ago, but literally the ones that people will be able to purchase tomorrow night will be literally hot off the press, as you say.
Bartley, talk to me about the book and what people can enjoy if they get their hands on a copy. You know, the sort of the research and the subject matter.
Yeah, the 628 players have played for Finn Harps since they came into the league in 1969. What we've basically done is we've collated each one of those players. We have a brief biography of each of the players. We have their statistics season by season. And then we have any milestones, Greg. How we did the research, both Joe and myself have been working on this for a very, very long time, as you can imagine. I've been researching the stats for about 40 years. I think Joe's been doing it separately for about 30 years. So there's been an awful lot of work. I mean, the book didn't appear overnight, but around COVID, decided we would pull it all together. We've had a few false dawns, Greg, but finally, you know, it's going to be available from tomorrow night.
I mean, this is sort of exhaustive in terms of research. Joe, how thorough were the records, you know, in being able to properly identify the 628 players, to be able to assemble the stats and, in a short bio? Surely that wasn't readily available for all the players, was it?
Of course it wasn't, Greg, no. We both literally started with blank sheets of paper. Myself and Bartley, as Bartley said, have been collecting this for, you know, over 30 years in my case and a bit longer in Bartley's case. We done it, first of all, trying to find out all the matches Van Harps had played. That involved, you know, going through old newspaper cuttings, you know, getting the results of matches. And then that led on to, you know, actually seeing who played in every game. That presented its own problems as well, because, you know, like if you're taking it, say, from national newspapers, you know, the spelling of people's names, all that sort of things. Or if you had two brothers playing, which we did, say, in the 70s, we had the two O'Doherty brothers, you know, Tony and Donal. If they both played, it was grand, because it was T O'Doherty and D O'Doherty. But if only one of them played in the game, you know, it was just literally listed as O'Doherty. So you're trying to figure out which of the O'Doherty brothers played in that game. So look, I would hate to be starting this from scratch now, Greg, you know, actually starting today and doing this. You know, the fact we've been gathering this over a long period of time, has helped.
Surely must be then the definitive and only thorough record of every player that's played for the club. I mean, it's an important document in terms of chronicling the history, isn't it?
Of course it is, you know, and this is the history of the club, you know, from the player's perspective, you know, so that every single player that's played a competitive game for Harps, you know, all 628 of them, you know, are included in the book. You know, they're all treated in the same way. They've all got their bios and whatnot. The amazing thing out of that, Greg, is 73 of those 628 players have played one game. Some of them have only made a substitute appearance, you know, so some of the people that are featured in the book have literally played 10, 15, 20 minutes of football for the club. But they're all part of the history of the club. They're all people that have, you know, contributed in whatever way, small or big. You know, so like Jonathan Minnick obviously has played 485.
That's handy
games.
Enough. I could have put his name in there.
Yeah, there's names that people will remember, you know, and people know. But it's those people that have only played a handful of games, you know, and it's good for those players as well that they're recognised, you know, and as you say, it's a historical document, you know, that will be there, you know, for a long time.
And Bartley, how many, obviously there's going to be some record of something somewhere, be it a newspaper article or a programme that's been dug up or something like that, maybe, I don't know. But did you have to rely on people's memories, you know, lifelong fans to fill any of the gaps, I wonder?
No, not at all. This is actually a statistical work. But like Joe and myself have done this, but we've had an awful lot of help from an awful lot of people. The late Michael Hayes in the FEI, at one stage we were tippy-tapping over and back with him, simply because the FEI had some records. They didn't have complete records. But through him we managed to get, you know, narrow down. It's certainly where Joe's saying, you know, we had brothers, or even worse again, you had, say, a number of Harkins played for Harps in 1984. Kenny Harkin would have been one of them. Usheen Harkin was another. And to even just narrow down who had actually played in the match, we had to pore over match reports. We had to pore over, you know, the FEI records. I can't describe the amount of detail and work we've gone into it.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
We've got things like, we've date of birth for every single player that's played a competitive match. My favourite story is we had a Czechoslovakian gentleman, Lubos Janato, and I thought, never going to get a date of birth for him. How am I going to do this? And I put it into a historians group, a football historians group on Facebook, and somebody came up with a website in Sweden. He's an artist, and I was able to contact them. And I was able to make contact with the man himself and get his, get his date of birth and stuff like that off him.
Wow, that's fantastic. That gives a real insight into how to get deep in relation to this. And I suppose that's come a cutoff point as well. Was that pretty much right where you felt all the data was all up to date to a certain point, Joe?
Yeah, like as Bartley said at the start there, Greg, we've had a few false dawns in this. Like, we really went to town in this during COVID, you know, when we had, you know, a bit more time and whatnot. So that we had planned to get the book out at a couple of different junctures, you know, over the last couple of years. And we've always kind of reached, you know, a stage, you know, where it was May, June, July time. We thought, well, sure, we'll wait till the end of the season and we'll go, you know, at the start of next season. But last year, you know, we played our 2000th competitive match towards the end of the season. So 2000's a nice round number, or we've actually played 2002, you know, up to the end of the season. We've completed 55 years in senior football, so a nice round number as well. So we made the decision kind of just before Christmas. Myself and Bartley met over a cup of coffee and we said, look, whatever we do now, this is it.
Well, you know, come here now, which one of you is going to admit that you're still keeping tabs? You can't put this much effort in and then stop.
No, like, at the end of every season, we would swap our facts. Like, we keep them separately. Yeah. And then at the end of the season, we'll swap our facts and figures and just make sure that they tally. And if they don't tally, we can identify, you know, which game it is that we're missing. And we go back, we get the newspaper out, or the new FAI Connect app is brilliant for us. And we literally, I tell you, we just don't stop. And we probably never will, Greg, until, you know, such a time that that we're no longer able to do it.
Yeah. Joe, any particular player or element of sort of gathering the information that jumps out to you, similar to Bartley's story there, or a little quirk that we would be interested in?
Yeah, look, there's a few things that kind of stand out, you know, when you're looking through it. Like, and even, you know, the great Jim Sheridan, you know, Jim was the captain of the FAI Cup winning team in 1974. So he features on the front cover of the book as well, if you've seen the front cover, you know.
Yeah, we're looking at it right now,
Jim's the central figure. And, like, Jim played 397 games for Harps, which is a hell of a lot of games, but Jim started every one of those 397 games. He never appeared as a substitute, you know. So Jim was one of these players, you know, if he was fit, he played. So you see nowadays, you know, there's a lot of squad rotation, you know, and all that sort of things. You know, so to have played nearly 400 games and every one of them was as a starter, you know, it's an unbelievable feat. So
it is. It's a really interesting point you make when you compare caps or appearances in modern football versus, you know, back in the day where there was a fraction of the games as much as anything else. Right, yeah. So you've managed to round up some members of the 1974 FAI Cup winning squad for a Saturday's launch, Bartley. Is it open to the general public by invite only, or what's the story?
No. Everybody's absolutely welcome, Greg. I mean, the headline guests are the 74 Cup team. I mean, it's 50 years since they won the Cup. You know, it's amazing that we have so many of them still with us. And I reckon there'll be about 8 or 9 of them with us tomorrow night to, number one, launch the book, but number two, also celebrate their achievement 50 years ago. But we're also hoping that a lot of other past players will be along. We've asked one or two, both myself and Joe have asked one or two of what we consider the special players. But, like, I do know that an awful lot of the other players, past players, have been in contact, and they will be along as well.
Is it fair to ask who your number one player of all time is, Joe?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult question to answer
as
well.
It's personal, Greg, though, like, so do you not offend anyone? It's a personal opinion. Don't worry about that.
Look, personally, my favourite, you know, like, I wasn't lucky enough to see the likes of, you know, Brenton Bradley and Jim Sheridan and those great players, you know, from the 70s playing. But Kevin McHugh would be probably my, you know, favourite that I've seen. You know, like, he was an unbelievable goal scorer. Like, only one player's played more games for Harps than him, you know. So while there's been many great players, he's probably the standout player.
Like, you cut him in half and he's Finn Harps.
Oh, he is, yeah. You know, even though he did go to Derry for a while, like, you know, we'll forgive him for that.
Nobody's perfect, Joe. Nobody's perfect.
No, exactly.
Bartley, who would be your number one player, personally speaking?
I find it very hard to answer that question, Greg, because I've done a lot of work with the past players and, you know, interviewed them and stuff like that. And I find the high regard that they all have for the club is massive. If I was at a push, it would be Brendan Bradley. I mean, the man's just simply a legend. He's also a gentleman. I'm proud now to actually call him a friend as much as, you know, a past player of Finn Harps. But similarly, Jim Sheridan, like anytime I ask the guys to do anything for the club in a historical sense, they're straight away, no problem. What can we do?
Yeah.
You know, how can we help you? You know, and even when we were doing this book, I would occasionally ring somebody out of the blue and say, guys, I've come across this newspaper report. You don't happen to remember who this guy was or where did he come from or how do I find him, you know? And like all the past players, they're great. You know, they really are. They all have a great feeling for the club.
All right, listen, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant piece of work. As you said, Joe, you wouldn't want to be starting it, but you have it in the bag. Joe Doherty and Bartley Ramsey, congratulations and good luck with the launch. It's open to the public, folks. The members, quite a number of them, seven or eight, I think Bartley mentioned, of the 1974 FAI Cup winning squad will be on hand on Saturday at 7 p.m. in the Drumbo Suite at Jackson's Hotel Bala Buffet. And I just think it's going to be a great, just even just to chat football and meet up with people like-minded. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Have a lovely day.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now we're going to talk about the Ulster final on Sunday. It's Donegal. It is Armagh. Martin McHugh is with us to join the conversation. Good morning to you, Martin. Thanks for your time.
Morning, Greg. Great to talk to you.
Very good. And I'll be getting your opinions in a moment, but I want to get some developing news, could we call it that? I don't want to be too dramatic here, but we've got some team news to hand Oisin, and we'll be getting Martin's reaction because I think this is hot off the press, so to speak.
Yeah, the team, Greg, has just been announced for the Ulster final this coming Sunday, and it looks like Sean Patton may be good to go. Jim McGuinness has made one change from the team which defeated Tyrone in the semi-final, and it's in the goalkeeping position. So Sean Patton returning to take that spot. Gavin Mulroney, of course, was in that position after Sean picked up an injury and had to leave the field in the second half of the Derry game. And that's the only change being made by manager Jim McGuinness. So the team is going to line out with the other 14 selected as they were against Tyrone. Mark Corn, Brendan McCall, Kieran Moore, the full-back line. Ryan McHugh, Keelan McGonigal and Pat Armogan at 5, 6 and 7. Jason McGee and Michael Langan in the middle of the field. But the front six being Shane O'Donnell, Kieran Thompson, Darrow O'Boyle, Patrick McBurdy, Oisin Gallen and Niall O'Donnell. And Sean Patton is back, named in goals.
Martin, Sean's back.
Yeah, Greg, that's great news for Donegal that he's named in goals. Now, he was named in goals for the Tyrone game as well and didn't play, Greg. So
always the sceptic. Always the sceptic, Martin.
Yeah, they could be. But hopefully, you know, he's fit to go, because if we look at it, where Derry pressed on his kickouts and, you know, we bombed a few of them over the top, and actually their goalkeeper ended up, Greg, coming out the field for the kickouts, and we end up getting 3-4 goals, probably three of them off kickouts. So, and then Tyrone made a decision thinking he was probably going to be in goals, and they didn't press the kickout, they gave us the kickout. So, you know, it was a great situation to have with Sean Patton, you know, is that you know, that option's there, and it does put the pressure on the opposition and everything else, and his experience he has in goals. But
I think too, when you're sort of saying to yourself, is, well, he's named, Armagh will be looking at that and saying, well, he is named, but will he be there either? You know, we just don't know in the lead up to a game if there's a bit of mind games, a bit of tactical play going on as well.
Yeah, well, they definitely probably, I don't think either team will name as selected. You expect that that's what normally happens. You know, you'd be surprised if that's what did happen. But Gavin Mulroney was very, very good the last. He did really, really well. In fairness, to be thrown into the deep end and everything else, you know, we only had, what was it, one game maybe in the National League, one game in the league against Cork, the first game. So he's done really well as a debutant, and it's great to have him there. And his ability to bomb ball as well, because he was on the field and we scored the last goal the last day. So it's good to have two good goalkeepers. Mm-hmm. But the experience of Sean Patton and everything else makes a difference. And teams are afraid of the likes of Niall Morgan, Sean Patton, Rory Began. These goalkeepers, Greg, they can kick over a press, which is a big thing to have nowadays, because sometimes have a high press.
Yeah, Greg McCabe was named for Armagh last night, Martin, and Jarrett O'Burns drops to the bench. Is that sort of a situation which may be reversed come game time on Sunday?
It's hard to know. A lot of Armagh people are very happy that he's named on the team. They feel that maybe, you know, he's going to be there as a hard worker, and he could be given a job of picking up someone of the Donegal defenders to mark or someone like that, you know. So they seem to be happy enough, and they've got a lot of big men and everything else. Suppose the big one, you know, Oisin and Greg, is Rian O'Neill, where he's positioned in the middle of the field and how Donegal deal with him. We normally, you know, Brendan McCall has picked him up when he's at full forward. Will Brendan McCall go to midfield to mark him, or will just Michael Langan pick him up? That's going to be a big battle, because they feel that they've allowed them to leave three big men in the full forward line, so they're going to bombard high ball and on top of Donegal. I expect that. That's what they do, and they do it early on. And I was listening to Stephen McDonald on a podcast there just on my way back from Dublin yesterday, and he passed a comment that the important thing with Donegal that we always found, he said, we play in the past, is get ahead of them early on. So I expect Armagh to come out of the blocks. Now, the one thing I'll say, Greg, about Armagh, there's a serious hunger in them. They're going to have to take a serious crowd to the game and everything else, and that has to be, you know, worth a couple of points and everything else. So if we can deaden that early on, I think that'll be important from a Donegal point of view.
Yeah, Oisin, obviously, you know, games aren't played on paper, but on paper, if you were to look at to the run into this, Donegal would be favourites, and I think fans would be heading up there with the expectation that, you know, Jim's going to deliver an Ulster title. Well, when Jim, as I say, games aren't played on paper.
Games aren't played, and you can even see in the bookies that Donegal are hot favourites for this, so they are, Greg, which, and I would agree, Martin, we're going to expect a really, really tight game here, and I think it's anyone's game come Sunday, and it's the start to this match is going to be crucial, so it is. But from a Donegal point of view, yes, there's a fantastic buzz about them at the moment, and when you actually reflect now on where we were 12 months ago, Donegal have basically come full circle here, and we find ourselves in an Ulster final. And you've Jim McGuinness at the helm, and Jimmy's back winning matches with Donegal, and there's a group of players that basically will go through a wall for this man, it seems to be, and that was very evident in the performances that they had against Derry and Tyrone, and we're running on a real, real high at the minute. So we are, and yes, some will say that Donegal will be confident of taking this Ulster title, but it's going to be a very, very tight affair.
Is it?
If you go back to last year,
this is
where Donegal is now. You go back to where Armagh was last year. Mm. They lost Ulster on a penalty shootout. That's not going to be sitting very well with them. They were put out of the championship by Monaghan on a penalty shootout. I still think Armagh haven't played their best football yet. I'm hoping it's not going to be Sunday. But even if they do play their best football on Sunday, I think Donegal have enough and the artillery there to deal with it. But there's a lot of factors that's going to come into play. The weather conditions may have a bearing on it. Some reports are suggesting that there could be torrential rain, there could be thunder and lightning come that time in Clonus on Sunday as well. But we just have to wait and see. Anything can happen on a final, and the slightest, anything even from a sending off, can have a huge can have a huge bearing on a game.
Of course, it can, Martin.
It's about managing the game plan. One thing about Donegal is Jim McGuinness will have a game plan. There's no doubt about it. Is there another trick for him in the book that's going to be different from what we've seen already? I expect there will be, and it's about how you manage that game plan. And if Donegal manage the game plan to the way they want it, they're going to be another shout here,
Martin, from an armchair fan's perspective. You know, we seem strong, we seemed determined, we seem fit. We seem to be able to adapt in game. We seem to be able to switch it up. There seems to be a great communication from the sideline to the pitch, and the players know what to do. We seem to be strong in all quarters, you know, that we can kick on, that we can chase a lead, that we can hold a lead, that we can grind out a tight victory as well. That's what it feels like at the moment. That's what it feels like that Jim McGuinness has managed to deliver over the last year.
Yeah, you're exactly right there, Greg. If you look at the Derry game, we led. At a stage, Derry took it back to, I think, 4 points at a stage. But we still looked very comfortable in what we were doing, and we knew what we were about against Derry. Then against Tyrone, it was completely different. We were 3 points down, you know, halfway through the second half. And Donegal teams in the past, 3 points down against Tyrone halfway through the second half would have lost that match. So, you know, even to get the score at the very, very end, to get the draw of the match and everything else. So, yeah, definitely, they're mentally very strong. I mean, we know Jim has done that with them. And as Oisin has said, they'll do anything for him and play for him. So it's a great situation we're in. I feel that looking at it and looking to the future is great. And we have a lot of talent there. And, you know, you have Conor O'Donnell and Owen Van Geller, who haven't played any championship football this year at all. So if they get them two back fit or them two on the field, that's going to make a big difference, because we did look the last day, you know, against Tyrone. We took players on and off and that there. So we just need to get a squad together, you know. I don't know what will happen this year, Greg, but I'd be very excited about next year when, you know, get another year in the bet, because we're making up for time. And I think it was Michael Murphy said, Armagh are 10 years in the plan and we are one in the plan. And, you know, so it does make a difference, you know, but it could come down to different things on Sunday. But it's a great situation. Armagh really had the easier side of the draw getting there. Sometimes that team, they do win finals when they get in the easier way, where Donegal have beaten probably two of the favourites, you know, two of the big top six, seven in the country, in Derry and Tyrone. So can we get that level again? I think the extra week rest is going to make a big difference, or Donegal, anything else. But it's a great place to be. There's a great buzz in the county. You know, children are enjoying it, and everybody's enjoying it, and there's a smile back on people's faces and everything else. So it's great, and we're going to enjoy it, because we, as I said to you before in the past, we don't be here all the time in Donegal, but I think somebody told me we've been in 11 of the last 13 Ulster finals. I mean, that's an unbelievable record for a county like Donegal. I mean, we talk about Kerry and Dublin and Athlone, or Galway, we'll say, and Connacht. But the fact of that, everybody's telling us it's the hardest province in the country, Greg. And we were in 11, I think, of the last 13. Mm. Now, somebody might correct me on that. But that's where we're at. And that's where we've had exciting times in football since you know, back in you know, 2009-10 from that on to now. And it's been great.
Oisín, is the big question how Armagh approach this game?
Just listening to what Martin's saying, of course the big question, how is Armagh going to approach this game?
I think there's a lot more... Donegal versus Tyrone, what do they do?
Well, there's a lot more pressure, first of all, I believe, on Armagh this year, because they have to win an Ulster title. As Martin said and Michael Murphy said, they're in this process a long time. So they are. Normally in that sort of cycle, when you start things off and you want to win a provincial title, it takes a couple of years. They're at it 10 years since Kieran McGeaney was there. So there's more pressure now going on to them going into this game. And I also feel that with Donegal having taken two big victories, I think this time around Martin says when you win easier games, you go on to win finals. But the momentum that Donegal are taking into the match, having taken the scalps of two big names, Derry and Tyrone, and at the same time, even though they're favourites, there's less pressure on this Donegal team, which is a sort of dynamic that you don't see very often. You've beat big teams, you are the favourites, but there's not as much pressure because Armagh supporters are now demanding something. Comes from Kieran McGeaney and his players this time around, because again, it's back to the point, they're 10 years into the process. They came very, very close last mm-hmm. year. Was that the year that they should have done it?
Mm-hmm.
Some might say it was. We'll wait to see what they bring to the table this time around. And I think that sort of dynamic of having beat big teams and not having the same pressure that Armagh have will be enough for Donegal to get over the line at the weekend.
Not looking past the Ulster final, Martin, but just generally sort of the way it plays out. Donegal, win or lose, will have three tough games. Then they face another set of tough opponents in the round robin section. There are other big teams, other top eight teams, top four teams that really won't face a challenge until they get really deep into this competition. Is that advantageous for Ulster teams, or more specifically Donegal, or does that favour the likes of Dublin?
Well, I think when you look at it, Greg, I mean, that's why, suppose you feel at the minute that neither Donegal or Armagh won the All Ireland. So you just feel it. So that's why winning the provincial championship is very important. You've seen, you know, Pádraig Joyce and the Galway players after winning Connacht. Normally they would just shake hands and walk off, but what it meant so much to them, because they won a trophy, they're probably feeling they're not good enough to win in All Ireland. I know they have players back in the field. So this championship finishes on Sunday evening, and there's a completely new, as you said, it's a new championship completely starting. And, you know, in the end up, a lot of people will say maybe Derry are in a better position than anybody because they had time to regroup, time to get together, time to look at everybody else and time to do things. But it's a completely different championship. You know, I think the All-Ireland is Dublin's to lose, and sometimes they do make mistakes and lose it. But generally, I think they're well, looking at the team so far, they're well ahead of the rest, Dublin and everything else. But and saying that, we look at different teams, and I go back to 2010 or 11 around that time when we're Donegal, we're coming to win the All-Ireland 12. It's not unlike that. A lot of the teams are not, you know, the Mayo team definitely has slipped a lot. Galway have slipped, you know. Kerry are not the team. Without Clifford, they look like a very, very, you know, an ordinary team. So you have Dublin all right and everything else. So it's a new championship, a new game. What's the pluses? If you won, you have Tyrone at home in the first round, which will be a big game in Balbuffet and everything else. If you lose, you play Westmeath at home in the round, and then you have Galway and Derry. You go to Derry, and then you play Galway if you lose not there. But suppose there's a plus then there that you can't meet them then in the preliminary round if you get there or the quarter final, Greg. So just there's pluses and minuses everywhere. But I think it's important for both teams to win silverware. I think that's what the managers, both managers want, because maybe they feel that maybe both teams are not good enough this year anyway, particularly Donegal. Maybe we're not ready yet. I think maybe next year, the year after, I'd be very excited about the next couple of years coming.
Yeah, but if we turn Armagh over, you're not going to be able to keep saying we're not near ready. You're going to have to start getting...
I think you're going to need a squad. I think you've said the game's come thick and fast. We're going to need a squad of players now. Where's Owen Van Galler and Conor Donnell? They would make a big difference to them. Like, I was very excited when I seen Conor Donnell first time playing. I think he's a very exciting player. And I think, well, hopefully they're not that far away either player. But I will be excited. One thing we do, we always do, is we produce good players in Donegal, good footballers all over. You see them at club level and everything else. I was down at the County Guild the last weekend. A lot of brilliant footballers playing for different teams there. So I think we always produce good players in Donegal. And I think that's the great thing about it, is the quality of football we have. And we'll always... And you know the great thing? And looking at the team this year, big, massive men, a lot of them. Big, big men in the areas we need. At times in the past, we were coming up against teams and we found it hard to compete with big men. We have them now. And it does excite you, because you do think of the thing, the 2011 and 12, and you say, look, this is where we're at. Jim's building again. His record is unbelievable in Ulster. He's a better record than any other manager in the Ulster Championship. He's had a great record. So it's exciting times. And it is. It's all done.
But we have to manage our expectations, don't we? Is it? Talk to me about fitness. You've watched a lot of these games, obviously, Osh. You saw the opposition's cramping up. You know, and I don't think 20 minutes of extra time really is going to be a massive game changer. This Donegal
team... Don't say extra time. We don't want extra time on Sunday.
But he seems to have got the team whipped into very good shape in really quite a short time.
And that was probably...
Everyone was saying that, you know, well, Derry, they've had 3 or 4 years and they've got to be stronger and they're going to be fitter. And that didn't seem to play out. How has he pulled that off?
Well, a lot of work with the players, Greg. And the players buying into it. And some may suggest maybe they're further ahead than what they thought they were going to be, or what the process was going to be. But physically... they have developed. Jason McGee is an example. Was always a big man, but he's a monster of a man now. And Jason didn't play for a huge part of the year because he was injured. But obviously he was working away in the background. He was doing his strength and conditioning, and he was very, very comfortable slotting in to the middle of the park. He played a bit in the league final, and then he marked Conor Glass, one of the best midfielders in the country. And then something similar against Tyrone, where he was very, very comfortable in manning the midfield and dominating the midfield area. And also, Greg, getting up for scores as well. They scored two important ones against Tyrone at the start of the second half. I'm only using him as an example.
I get you.
The rest of them are all following suit. Kieran Moore's just new under the panel. I spoke to him for the first time after the Ulster semi-final. And he's a big-framed young fella. Mm. So he is. But conditioning-wise, they have excelled. They have themselves in a position where physically... they can actually compete now with these top teams in Ulster, and maybe with the top teams in the country as well. But that's all down to pure, sheer hard work. These guys aren't training 2-3 times a week.
But you need the right person to motivate them.
And you need the right person to motivate them. And you need the right people around them.
Just think, Osh, on that point, I think a big one is, and it's going to be interesting what happens from now on, Jim McGuinness made a right call to take the team on the foreign training camp early. He went before the league. But a lot of teams have gone, including Derry went and Kerry went, and other teams have gone. They went in after the league, not there. And I think the Jim made the right call there. I think that was a big part of the whole thing, getting that base them together, training twice a day and everything else, getting that base into them, Greg, particularly at that time before the league. And I think maybe next year we look at it, these teams that's going foreign, maybe will change and make a decision to go a lot earlier than they're doing, because it doesn't, with the games coming thick and fast, Greg, you see, I don't think I don't think it can fit to go in a training camp at that stage. You need that base in. So I think we have to give them a lot of credit. People were saying, where are they going on a training camp? Jim made a right call there.
Right, Martin, just finally from you, obviously other than defeat, extra time and conceding too big a lead to Armagh early on, what do you think we need to avoid doing on Sunday? What would you not like to see us doing on Sunday?
Well, I think the big thing is don't concede goals. That's the important thing. And the other thing is black cards seem to play a big part at the minute. Where one time in the past, if you were down a player, it didn't make a difference. You have to be very disciplined in what you do. Now, we have an Ulster referee and Martin McNally refereeing the game. And so he should know Ulster football inside. I just you know, it's important we don't try not to pick up a black card. I remember the last time we played them was when Sean Patton ended up getting a black card, and we didn't know who was going goals and everything else in that situation. But and you know, they will put, I would think they'll put high ball on top of us early on. They'll do that. I think just be ready for all them different situations. They're a wee bit hurting to Armagh, I suppose, from the league final and everything else. And look, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll, you know, the weather might never bear on. I think it was a dry day. Hopefully it is and everything else. You know, I think sometimes, you know, hopefully the better footballers come out on top. And as I said, we have a lot of good footballers. I'm really looking forward to it in the sense of it's exciting times. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to see us back there, and you know, whatever happens after that. But it's a great occasion, a great day, and there's, you know, the smiles on the faces that you see out in the pitch, to see all the kids out in the pitch looking to get signed autographs or something else, and that's what it's all about.
Brilliant.
It does
stuff.
Unite the county, the whole lot, Greg.
For sure, it's a great buzz. Martin, thank you so very much indeed. Martin McHugh there. Right, Oisin, so now the build-up has been ongoing for quite some time now. DL debate, the score, all the sports coverage as well. And it doesn't end there. We've done a bit today. Tomorrow,
we're broadcasting live tomorrow afternoon from Chrysler. We have Paul McDevitt's show, the Saturday Shuffle, from 12 to 3. And we've decided to stay down there as well. And we're going to have the sports show from Chrysler tomorrow afternoon. And Brendan Devaney is going to join the Saturday team, because he's going to have a special broadcast from 3:15, where he will be speaking to a number of, best way to put that is football legends from the parish. All right, Brian McLaughlin. They're all former Donegal players. Brian McLaughlin, Christy Toy and Martin McElhenney. And as we know, Christy and Martin were both part of the 2012 All-Ireland winning team. So we're going to get their expert thoughts and previews and opinions on this current Donegal setup heading into the Ulster final. So that's going to be a half an hour special from 3:15 tomorrow afternoon. So it'll be good to get the thoughts.
Do you seriously think you're going to get them to shut up before 4?
Probably. I have told Brendan.
I mean that in the nicest possible way. Yeah. DV.
He's the first problem.
Well, he's the only problem.
I have told him if it does go over the four.
From 3:15 to 4:00 on Saturday.
Yeah,
and come here, our own coverage then on Sunday.
Yeah, well, obviously the match starts at 4. We'll have the build-up from round about 3:30, maybe before it. Martin will be joining us, Michael McMullen, who is an expert journalist and analysis on the Gaelic football world in Ulster.
He was on with Dev on Monday.
But he was very, very good. He knows Ulster football inside out. So
do you know what's worrying me? Yeah. Martin McHugh's quiet optimism.
Yeah,
it really. I was fully confident, but now he's starting to feel a bit confident.
But that's worrying. What he does. That's
it's
what he
worrying
does.
Me.
That's what he's paid to do, Greg. He's paid to drop them wee things in. But and then Brendan will obviously be joining us in commentary as well. So fingers crossed over the course of the couple of hours, it pans out for Donegal. Just a couple of other wee notes, Greg, before we finish up.
Yeah,
and we go
ahead,
for breaking news. I suppose all this around Donegal senior footballers and the hurlers takes money. So it does. So there's the fundraising is continuing by Donegal GAA, and they are currently running a squares campaign, and the last few squares are still available. So if you go to the social media channels of Donegal GAA or onto the website, or indeed they can contact the PRO Sinead Breen or indeed Kieran Kelly, the last of the squares, few remaining squares for that fundraiser are available, and I'm sure they will be snapped up before the game on Sunday. The money of course is for the Donegal team training funds, and the hurlers as well. We can't, and amongst all this football, we do have a senior hurling team who are trying to reach an All-Ireland final of 2 games left. And if they won the first of those tomorrow against Roscommon down at the Hyde in Roscommon, they'll be heading back to Croke Park to the Nicky Rackard All-Ireland Cup final.
Which is fantastic. On the progress being made in hurling in this county is remarkable. And we're picking players from different parts of the county. It used to be different back in the day, but times are good.
Times are good. It's exciting to be stuck in the thick of it. It's great to be back to where we are again, Greg, so quickly from where we were, and there's a fantastic feeling around the county at the moment.
Yeah,
and listen, long may that continue.
For sure.
Yeah, and that everyone enjoy the match and safe trip.
But I think safe trip indeed. And I think already, you know, we've had a couple of good days out. Hopefully things go our way. But either way, both of those groups, I actually almost prefer the losing group, if that makes sense, the Derry Galway as a spectator.
Doesn't matter the groups, it doesn't matter if.
What about watching games?
One thing to remember here, Greg, is Donegal are now in an Ulster final, and they're in with a huge shout.
Mm.
Okay, they're in with a massive shout of taking a first title in 5 years. But if it doesn't work out on Sunday, Don't be too despondent on it.
I'm not your child.
This is only the start of something, and Martin
save
said that.
Save that for the twins. I am going to cry myself to sleep.
So, but anyway, we'll see how it goes.
All right. Thanks, Osh. Yep.